Last year, school districts in western Wisconsin dealt with an abundance of snow days. Ah, those were the good old days. School districts had to pivot like never before when it came to apparent in March that their buildings would not be open to students because of the coronavirus. Suddenly, every school became a virtual school. We'll hear some stories about how it's working and maybe how it's not working, and we'll explore the lasting effects of the pandemic on school districts in western Wisconsin, from academics to economics. COVID-19 and the schools is our focus today. This is The West Side. Glad to have you with us today. I'm Dean Kallenbach. Joining us in a few minutes to talk about public schools in the pandemic are John Griffith, the director of the Cameron Academy of Virtual Education within the School District of Cameron, Linda Flottam, a longtime school board member in Turtle Lake and a member of the board of the Wisconsin Association of School Boards, and Ann Hasse, who teaches fifth grade at Wakanda Elementary School in Menominee. She was named Wisconsin Elementary Teacher of the Year in 2014. First, though, we bring in Rich Kramer from WPR News to give us our weekly update. We're starting the show talking about how coronavirus is impacting western Wisconsin. Rich Kramer, welcome. Good to have you back.
Good to be here.
So the incidence of COVID-19 in western Wisconsin continues to be relatively low. Our 16-county area has 246 cases reported total as of yesterday, even before the Supreme Court struck down Governor Evers' safer-at-home order. We saw some businesses start to open up a bit. What sorts of changes have you noticed in behaviors around here this week?
Well, just that, you know, I didn't see it firsthand, but I had heard reports that some bars had opened up in the Eau Claire area, especially in the college district known as Water Street. But today I was looking around, and a number of the bars that I would have expected to be open post the Supreme Court decision were not. So that is probably because the health department, the county health department in Eau Claire, put out their own rules that effectively bans gatherings of 10 or more people. But right now, I just got off the news call where we pitch our story ideas for the day. There appears to be some questions among, you know, the Tavern League and, you know, maybe the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce about whether the local health officials have the authority to do that. But I did also talk with the one of the assistant county corporation councils, the attorneys for Eau Claire County, who said that local health officials do have this authority. He said that the State Department of Health, the ruling was against them on a technicality, basically saying that they didn't follow the rulemaking process correctly. They just unilaterally put out rules, which the Supreme Court said doesn't fly. So I think right now what you're going to see is we already see a patchwork of a lot of local governments setting their own rules that are similar in some ways to safer at home. And whether those are challenged or not remains to be seen. I kind of would expect that some of them would be challenged, if, especially if they try to extend these orders at the local level, but we'll see.
Yeah. Just a preview of next week's show. Our hope is to kind of look ahead, because it's we're coming into Memorial Weekend already next week, and to look and see what things look like as far as readiness for businesses to be open to take tourists, that sort of thing. Governor Evers mentioned people coming from Minnesota and Illinois into these communities, and we've seen a variety of responses in our area. In the past 2 weeks, there has only been one death recorded in our 16-county area of western Wisconsin. Interestingly, that person was from Burnett County, one of the few counties in the state that up until that time had not even reported a positive test. Pepin County, the other county that hadn't reported a positive test, got their first case this week as well. What do you know about the situation in Burnett County, Rich?
I really don't know much. All I saw was that the health department put out a notice on Facebook saying that they had one positive case and that was a death. So I really haven't been following what's going on up in that neck of the woods.
Okay.
I did look at the overall numbers yesterday for a story. I listened to the briefing yesterday with Governor Evers, Department of Health Secretary Andrea Palm, Ryan Westergaard, who's the state's epidemiologist. And they were basically lamenting the decision by the Supreme Court. But when I looked the numbers up, they had come out just around 2 o'clock. They do that every day. 70 of the 72 counties now have positive cases. I think the only two are Langlade and Taylor, but don't quote me on that.
I think it's Menominee and Taylor. Menominee County and Taylor County.
Yeah, so there is the presence of this virus throughout a lot of the state, but like you said, a lot of the more rural counties have very low positive rates. And, you know, that's still the question is whether or not that's because of testing or if it's just because of low population density. It's hard to know that. I would expect to see more positives in the hinterlands, as it were, now that the National Guard is out with these community testing sites. Because for the longest time, the tests were in such short supply and we didn't have the capacity to process them very fast. So the state had come out with recommendations that said, basically, you don't get a test unless you are hospitalized and very ill, or if you're a frontline worker. I mean, there was specific criteria. So they've since lifted that, and now they're just testing anybody that has, some of the symptoms of COVID-19 as laid out by the CDC.
Now, the big court news this week, of course, was the state Supreme Court knocking down the governor's safer at home order. But there was another court case that was kind of interesting that you were involved in covering. You had a story this week about a court ordered quarantine. What's happening in that case?
Yeah, that was Eau Claire County. The county officials are releasing almost no information about it. All that I know is that the county health department did seek a judge's order to mandate a quarantine for someone. And the way I understand it is the original judge's order allows the county to hold this person, detain them. They don't say where, they don't say how, but for 72 hours. And then there's going to be what was described to me as a probable cause hearing. And that hearing will kind of set out the length of quarantine, et cetera, whether there's the evidence that supports it. And the county corporation council that I talked to said that, ideally the person would be symptom free by that time. So, but they're not releasing any information about the individual, they wouldn't even say whether or not the person had COVID-19. But, in the discussion with this attorney, he mentioned COVID-19 and the need to protect the public. So one could assume, but, they've been very late on details. All I know is that this is the first time that the county has sought such an order to basically quarantine someone. And that gets into the whole discussion about who has the powers under the state law. The state statute is 262.06, and that lays out pretty broad authorities for health officers and the state, it appears, in the statute. When there's a state of emergency, and it lets county health officials, quarantine people whenever there's a communicable disease present. And so, again, what's interesting is this kind of balancing act. You've got the state Supreme Court saying that the Department of Health Services did not have the authority to use that statute, but it was a pretty narrow focus in that they just didn't go about it the right way, that the rules have to be promulgated and then approved by the legislature. The lawmakers have to be involved in it, and the agency can't act unilaterally. But again, so after that Supreme Court decision, I instantly got back to the County Corporation Council in Eau Claire and asked, does that mean that this court-ordered quarantine is out the window? And they said, no, it's two different things. Because local health officers do have that authority, and they don't need to go through the rulemaking process. So long story short, I'm not sure what's going on. I mean, it's very interesting.
The Visit Eau Claire sent out a release this week after the Supreme Court ruling, and basically I think the title of it was something like Welcome to the Wild West, and that's kind of where we are right now. Rich Kramer is our guest. He's a reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News based in Eau Claire. We're talking about COVID-19 in western Wisconsin and how it's affecting us. For the balance of the show, we're visit for with Rich for a couple minutes more, but after that we're going to be talking about the effect of the pandemic in our public schools, both now and in the future, and we've got some great guests lined up for that. But Rich, your beat, one of your beats statewide, is the higher education system in Wisconsin, and there's been a lot of news on that front, including higher loss estimates and an order by UW System President Ray Cross that system schools need to be looking for curriculum cuts. Any sense how that is playing out in our western Wisconsin campuses in River Falls, Menominee, Rice Lake, or Eau Claire?
Well, so this is also a very fluid situation, very confusing in a way, because President Cross, UW System President Cross, who oversees the entire, 26 campuses, two-year and four-year, laid out this vision. And this vision is post, is he's hoping that this will be the kind of the guide for the UW system after the COVID-19 pandemic. But it's also obviously some sort of a cost-saving measure. And the gist of it is that he said that campuses need to come up with specialized missions. They need to eliminate duplications of programs, and what that means is degree programs, majors. So, again, details are pretty light, and it was not acted on. It was just kind of put out there. But the regents say that they're going to vote on it as early as June. And they're going to be holding some listening sessions, but it's just for shared governance members, faculty, senate, et cetera, administrators. I'm working to try to get a handle or get a hold of some of that audio to find out what people are saying. But initial reactions from campuses have been, faculty in particular, have been extremely negative. They're still not happy with how the former restructuring proposal that happened like late 2017, early 2018. And that was the restructure that basically merged two-year campuses with four-year campuses, eliminated UW Extension and the UW Colleges system. And now this proposal seems to be kind of a restructure 2.0, at least to me. But Ray Cross basically said, of course, there's going to be layoffs because they're talking about the possibility of not every campus needs to have every major. And his quote was, campuses can't be all things to all people. And the pace that President Cross set out for accomplishing this is quick. They have to identify things, potential programs that can be cut, the campuses do, by January, and everything has to be in effect by next fall, like fall of 2021. So in higher education, that is a breakneck pace, and that's adding to the anxieties that a lot of these employees at campuses are already feeling. And what really surprised me is I got a copy of an internal email that UW Eau Claire Chancellor Jim Schmidt sent to shared governance leaders at UW Eau Claire, and it was very strongly worded and saying that, the system shouldn't be making these decisions, shouldn't be choosing what programs stay and what it should be up to the shared governance leaders on campus. And that is interesting to me because with the last restructure proposal, you didn't see that outright pushback from administrators on campuses. They all just said, we're going to work through this and we're going to include people and et cetera. But this, this seems to be a rejection from, UW Eau Claire's top administrator. So I tried to get a copy of that and tried to get an interview. They're not responding to me right now, so that kind of gives you a sense of how touchy this really is. But what I'm watching is to see if other administrators at UW campuses start pushing back. And I've heard through the telephone lines, the telephone game, that potentially some of the regents on the UW Board of Regents are not on board with it either. But I've never seen in my years of covering higher education, at least the UW system, I have never seen a proposal introduced by a system president be voted down by regents. Mm-hmm. So it's just fascinating. And lastly, I want to mention, too, that just yesterday, some of the campuses in our region, at least one, and La Crosse, I still think of it as Western Wisconsin, they started announcing that they're introducing plans to reopen their campuses. So River Falls says that they're going to start letting people on eventually and in a very careful, measured way. UW-Green Bay also said that they're going to open up as of July 1st. That's not for everybody, but they're going to let professors on campus so they can start planning for classes. And the big announcement will be July 10th or before, where the UW system will decide whether there's going to be in-person classes in the fall or not. And that is vitally important for campuses because they're losing untold amounts of money because they don't have students in the dorms. They're very reliant on dormitory, you know, housing fees, dining service fees, and all the other fees that are generated when you just have that many bodies on campus. So they are bleeding money right now, and they are basically saying they're going to do everything they possibly can to have classes in person this fall. So we'll see on July 10th whether that happens or not.
Well, and with that, President Cross said UW system schools will be testing teachers, students, and staff for COVID-19 when students do return mm-hmm. in the fall. Does that seem realistic, or is that a PR move to comfort incoming students and their parents?
I don't know what's realistic anymore, but it's definitely to try to soothe people, I think. But I think it seems like they're earnest about it. That would be a lot of cost for the campuses. Of course, because they're talking about not only testing every student, faculty, and staff member, but they're also talking about contact tracing, and that takes a lot of time to find all the people who may have come in contact with someone who ended up testing positive. But President Cross said that the goal is to make people need to be comfortable going back to campuses. Because just like with the businesses, you can open them up, but whether or not people are going to go rushing to the store or to the restaurants, you know, is another matter. So we don't really know. But after that Supreme Court decision, a lot of people did rush to some bars. So, you know, at least there's a portion of the population that doesn't seem so worried about the COVID-19 virus.
Rich Kramer is a reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio's news department based in Western Wisconsin. Rich, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You can read or hear Rich's work at WPR.org. Next up, we dive into the current and future life at public schools in Western Wisconsin in light of the pandemic, and we'll open the phones for you. Are you a student or the parent of a student who has experienced a sudden shift to virtual learning? What works well? What doesn't? Are you a teacher who's had to pivot? We'd enjoy hearing your stories. Call 800-228-5615, 800-228-5615, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Dean Kallenbach. This is The West Side on the Ideas Network. We're back on The West Side, and for the rest of the hour, we're exploring the effects of the pandemic on public education in Western Wisconsin. Our guests are Linda Flottam of the Turtle Lake School Board, John Griffiths of the Cameron Academy of Virtual Education, and Ann Hosse of the Menominee School District. And Ann Hosse, I'd like to start with you. First, give us a sense of what pre-pandemic normal looked like for you and your classes at Wakanda Elementary School.
Well, pre-pandemic, we were heading into trimester 3, which is our favorite. You know, our kids really showcase their independence, our routines, our protocols. You know, everything seems to be going in one direction. We were excited about spring break, and I would say we were pretty much all systems a go.
Part of what you're doing is preparing students in fifth grade, I assume, for middle school life, right? Is that that's
correct.
How it works in Menominee? So that changed course quickly. Most Wisconsin schools have been closed since mid-March, and they remain closed till the end of the school year. How did the Menominee School District react at first when it became apparent that something different was going to be happening?
Well, we had a little insight the Friday before we were scheduled to close for spring break. Instructing our students to take, you know, maybe more than they would have for a normal Friday before a spring break. And then after that, I would say our leadership team under the direction of Dr. Zadowski just did a great job of keeping us in the loop as, you know, new things changed by the day, by the minute, by the hour. I would say our fifth grade team in the SDMA certainly rose to the call, and there were growth for sure, that activity and collaboration that we've seen as a result, just nothing short of miraculous, really.
Talk about the process you as a teacher went through to move your curriculum online.
So at my school, we are a team of three fifth grade teachers. I'm joined by Lisa Boer and Mr. Shuddy. And we just started thinking, like, well, what are the routines and what are things that kids know really well? And could we build on the independence of those activities to go virtual? And then our circle was, necessarily enlarged because we wanted all fifth graders in the SDMA to have a similar experience. So then our team became a team of about 19 individuals, and we separated ourselves by content, and that kind of reduced the level of planning as we kind of specialized in just one thing and developed a district website, which serves as our learning hub for kids to go to each week for their at-home learning goals.
Now, you are a member of Menominee School District's online learning team for the fifth grade. So, Ann Hasse, what are your responsibilities there, and how did that fold into the work that you did to change your curriculum over?
Well, I joined the ELA team and with my colleague, Lisa Boer. So we are tasked with the reading and the writing lesson plans each week. We also need to make sure that our friends that don't have access to technology are getting as equitable an experience as we possibly can plan for with our friends that do have their digital needs being met at home, which is really, really a challenge because, you know, technology offers so many things and so many opportunities. So to sift through the things that are really the good nuggets and the things we want to provide to our families, yet also be very, very cognizant of the friends that are receiving the printable packets each week.
We're talking about how the pandemic has affected public schools in western Wisconsin from an academic standpoint and others as well, social, nutritional, economic. That was the voice of Ann Hasse. She is a fifth grade teacher at Wakanda Elementary School. I'd like to fold in Linda Flottam now. Linda is a member of the Turtle Lake Board of Education, also the Region 1 Director for the Wisconsin Association of School Boards. And Linda Flottam, we heard a teacher's point of view about transitioning from in-classroom to virtual learning in a matter of days. What sorts of challenges did the closing of school buildings cause for the Turtle Lake School Board?
Well, Dean, the Turtle Lake School Board has an awesome administrative team, and they were like way ahead of the game here. They had things already planned the minute they started hearing the possibility of closure. And so we had a lot of extra special meetings, but you know, we went through with our principals and our administrator, and they explained how they were setting up staff meetings with all of the staff and how they were sending out emails to all of the parents and students to get them prepared for the fact that we were going to have to go online. Our main concern was that because we're in such a rural area, we don't have real good coverage for our online work. So the first thing that they did was they sent out emails to everyone to find out where it didn't reach so that we knew that we would have some families that simply did not have internet connections. And so then we ordered hotspots for them. And then we made sure we had enough Chromebooks for all of the middle school. Well, the middle school and high school had Chromebooks already. And the plan was the last day of school, they all take them home. Mm-hmm. Well, we send along packets for the elementary, and then suddenly it's like, okay, this is going to last longer than we wanted to, and we can't just forget about the elementary. So then we got more Chromebooks, and anyone who didn't have an older sibling was given a Chromebook. If they needed a hotspot, they were given a hotspot. And the principals and the teachers have really gotten together, and they meet a lot. They meet online constantly, all week long. We set up a schedule saying we have to try to make this as normal as we can for the students. And so the teachers were online every day. They, if there were parents that didn't want to meet during the day because they were actually at work and they wanted to be there to help their students when their students needed to work, then the parents set up a time later in the evening. So we have teachers that are calling and talking to parents and helping the parents through to find the apps that we could. We found some great elementary apps so that the kids could do fun games and still learn. And then all of our teaching staff have sent out videos. They weekly send out videos to all of their students. They FaceTime, they Zoom, you know, they chat with them in any way that they can and provide any help that they can, because teachers miss their students.
Sure. 800-228-5615 is a number for you to call if you'd like to join the conversation, 800-228-5615, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Talking with Linda Flottam on the Turtle Lake Board of Education, you've been on the board for a quarter century. Do you recall any time in your during your time there that the district has had to pivot so quickly and so broadly?
No. No, there's never been anything that has created such a large change, you know, throughout the entire pre-K through 12 system.
You not only serve on the Turtle Lake Board, but you're also the regional representative of the statewide Wisconsin Association of School Boards. And you represent 39 school districts in northwestern Wisconsin, including schools in Polk, Barron, Rusk, Sawyer, Washburn, Burnett, Douglas, and Ashland counties. Big rural area.
Yes.
What have you been hearing from the boards of those districts?
We all meet regionally, the WASB board does. And so I've reached out to all of them saying, you know, if there's anything that I can help you with, you know, just let me know. I can meet with you online any way needed. But WASB themselves has also sent out just weekly emails. The staff is working from home, and they just send out as much information as they can. They try to keep everyone ahead of the most important information, you know, legislatively, what they can plan on, what they can't plan on, just trying to keep all of the school boards educated just all along this whole process.
I want to shift now to John Griffiths. John Griffiths is the director of the Cameron Academy for Virtual Education. And so far, we've been talking about schools that have had to convert from in-classroom to online learning. But you direct the academy. That's what you and your staff always do. Give us a little historical background of the academy and how it fits in with the mission of the Cameron School District, if you would.
Yeah, you bet. We're kind of a smaller school. We have about 115 students in our school. Pre-K through 12, we actually have kids down by La Crosse, Green Bay, Ashland, Eau Claire, Hudson, but about a third of them are from around our area, right around our neck of the woods up here. We are a virtual school, and there's different portions of virtual schools out there. Some are called blended learning, where actually they go to school part of the time, and they go to online learning some of the time. We are a total virtual school, so this is kind of like a snow day for the neighborhood. We don't miss a school for a snow day. We just kind of keep moving on. We did have to cancel a couple events. Like, we have a spring picnic, which we're supposed to have today, that we all get together and get to meet for. And we get to see our faces. And, of course, the state testing was canceled as well, too. But for the most part, we started about 2010 as an alternate, flexible, different way of learning. And like Ann and Linda kind of pointed out, there are some hurdles you got to get through in order to facilitate learning at home. We do project-based learning as well through textbooks, or kids create projects that we kind of match up with state standards for. But a lot of the older kids do a lot on virtual education, and they can pick a wide variety of courses. But, you know, hats off to Ann and Linda and their school districts, and a lot of the school districts around the area here. Switching gears that fast is very tough to do, and some of the hurdles, again, is not only trying to get the materials to them, but are they able to get online? Are they able to get the computers? Are they able to get those kind of things, the resources? For us, again, it's very good because we're ready to go. But I know a lot of other schools have been asking us, you know, how do you do this? How do you do that? And we kind of go through the process and try to share what we know as best we can on that. The hardest part about the whole thing is we kind of worry about the kids at home. Are they getting support? Are they having created a schedule? Are they able to meet their work? Are they able to get questions answered? I know, like a lot of local school districts around the area here too, they're really working hard to make sure the kids are fed at home and those kind of things. But motivation and kind of checking on the kids and make sure they're working. Because again, I'm actually a math teacher too, besides the administrator here. So I like meeting with my kids, you know.
Yeah.
And as all teachers, you know, that's what kind of keeps you young again. So.
Now, you know, the virtual school is just one part of the Cameron School District. You have traditional education as well in the district. Have other schools within the district or in other districts near you asked you for help in transitioning to online learning, since that's something you folks kind of do as a matter of course?
Yeah, they have. And actually some Rice Lake school teachers have reached out to me as well. But again, most of our teachers, like the Turtle Lake and Menominee school teachers, they kind of jumped on board and did the best they can. Google Classroom has been a wonderful help. Just having these tools that are just kind of emerging the last 2 or 3 years. Google Classroom works with Google Docs and all the other functions. Google Meet is what a lot of schools have used to meet with their students and things like that. Yeah, they reached out, but for the most part, once they get in the handle of it, the teachers, you know, I don't know if you know much about teachers, but you're always learning. Every day you learn something as a teacher, even though you think you should be the expert, you're really not. The kids teach you just as much as we try to teach them. So it's a kind of a neat experience here, but it's kind of a scary experience too, in that you know, who would expect that this would happen.
Yeah.
and how fast it happened. Just to throw another note, I used to be the athletic director over here too.
Yeah.
And I just feel so bad for the seniors right now with their senior sports. You know, we had some kids that were supposed to go to state and track, and our baseball team and softball team. You know, these kids worked hard for that season. And, you know, but we, you know, pull up our pants and we say, okay, let's go ahead, what we got to do, and do the best we can with what we got.
Well, for your sake, John Griffiths, I wish it was 40 degrees and snowing today so you didn't feel so bad about missing your in-person picnic, because it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
That's the voice of John Griffith. He is the CAVE administrator. CAVE stands for Cameron Academy of Virtual Education. He's with us to talk about the pandemic and its effect on public schools in western Wisconsin. Also joining us this hour, Linda Flottam. She is a member of the Turtle Lake Board of Education and the Region 1 Director of the Wisconsin Association of School Boards. And Ann Hossie. She's a fifth grade teacher at Wakanda Elementary School, named in 2014 as a Wisconsin Elementary Teacher of the Year. They're our guests for the remainder of the hour. Are you concerned that the virtual learning forced upon school districts by COVID-19 is leaving some students behind? Are you worried about sending students back in the fall? Are you worried about the economic health of your district? Join us by emailing ideas@wpr.org or giving us a call at 800-228-5615. I'm Dean Kallenbach on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is The West Side. You're listening to The West Side. We're talking about how public schools in western Wisconsin have been adapting to the pandemic and the safer-at-home orders and all the things that go on with that. Big news that popped out yesterday, Wisconsin Public Policy, or Wisconsin Policy Forum, put out a paper yesterday titled Wisconsin's Digital Divide and Its Impacts on Learning. And I'd like to read the first paragraph of that report, then get reaction from each of our guests. Here's that paragraph. The COVID-19 crisis threatens to exacerbate the digital divide between students who have fast, reliable at-home internet access and those who do not. This divide has long been significant, but recent events underscore its importance. It can now determine which students have a seat in their new virtual classroom and which are left to fend for themselves. Ann Hossie, the Menominee School District, is one of the larger and more urban school districts in western Wisconsin. Are there students being left behind? And does the district provide devices and software for those who may not have access?
Yes, similar to what I just heard from the Turtle Lake School District, we did. We cleared our Chromebook carts and tried to get as many in the hands of kids in our elementary, K-5. We have a 1-to-1 ratio with our 6-12 students, so they were set, but we didn't want to leave out the elementary kids. So that was an opportunity. But yes, I would agree the digital divide still exists, but I know teachers across the state are doing whatever it takes, you know, traditional phone calls, letters in the mail, pen pals, you know, anything we can do to stay in contact with our kids. You know, we're doing it to try to keep them connected, but, you know, missing your class Zoom call, you know, where 55 kids maybe out of your 63 are able to join on a weekly basis, yeah. But then you have those few that aren't seeing those faces, and your heart just goes out to them.
John Griffiths, as a virtual school, Cameron Academy must be very aware of where those broadband gaps exist. How much of a challenge is it to make sure your students have robust enough connections and hardware to do their schoolwork?
Yeah, that's been a key factor for a long time. We have tried hotspots. Hotspots doesn't work as good as a direct connection, so we actually offer a stipend for some families if they're in a tough spot to try to get a faster broadband to them. I know down by the Viroqua area, you know, especially the Hills, Black River Falls area, it's pretty tough. Rust County is very tough as well. Any rural area, you know, it's tough to get there. That's why we do offer project-based learning as well. I know families that have like three or four students that are on at the same time. It doesn't work working with your teachers. So we have to kind of program ourselves to space our meetings out so we don't overlap. Those are all issues you have to kind of think about with electronics. But again, project-based learning, I know a lot of schools, like in fact our Cameron Middle School right now has these little packets out for kids that are not able to get online for students to work on and keep up with their work. So it's pretty tough.
Now, Linda Flottam, you represent one of the most rural parts of the state in your role as the Region 1 Director on the Wisconsin Association of School Boards. And there are districts in your region where many families are at or below the poverty line. Cost is a primary reason students in Wisconsin lack internet access. How much conversation happens in the Wisconsin Association of School Boards about the need to build up rural broadband connections for low-income families?
We have that conversation at every one of our meetings. Because we know just how important that is. I mean, even if we didn't have this pandemic, there are certain times when the students really need to do, you know, to do their work on a computer, to be able to Google things and find information to complete their assignments. And if they don't have that connection, they're really at a disadvantage. All of our schools and all of our libraries and a number of our businesses will have free Wi-Fi, but that really still makes it extremely difficult for some of these families, you know, at such a low income.
Yeah.
So we continually bring that forward and say we have to make sure that we can reach everybody because there are still just areas where it just isn't there.
The number to call to join the conversation, 800-228-5615, 800-228-5615. Tom from Menominee joins us. Tom, welcome to the West Side.
Yes, calling from the North Woods, I guess you say, but my question is pretty simple. We've got the Academy, which is a virtual world where they learn, and we've got the student contact, such as in math or physics or other areas where there's labs and there's a lot of learning that can happen with the teacher-driven based learning. The question is quite simple. It has to do with the level of achievement. When a student goes to the university, the technical college, or post-secondary education, you have to meet a standard of achievement to go to these schools, such as Madison, Stout, or even the technical colleges. The question I have is very simple. With the gentleman who's working with the Cameron Academy and for the other teachers that you have, they could comment maybe on, have we seen a drop-off on the level of achievement? Have we seen a steady achievement, or have we seen a better achievement using the virtual world? And these certifications are important because in all phases of industry, in all phases of success down the pike, you need to have some type of achievement if you're going to be successful in your profession. So with that, I'm going to let you guys answer the question. on the level of achievement, and then I'll listen on the radio if that's okay.
That'd be great. Tom, thank you for the question. Good question. John Griffiths, that pivoting is one thing, but, you know, you I'm sure, are looking at this since you run a virtual academy. Are these students as well prepared for the next step as the students who are in an in-person environment? And how do you make sure of that?
Well, that's a very good question. One of the things you got to look at is that, for hands-on class, like a welding class, we really can't offer a welding class. So that's why, like, a school like Turtle Lake would be awesome for a kid to go come to school and do welding and those kind of things. But for, like, different type of lab class, we actually do a lot of labs in our programs, and the kids actually achieve well. To me, the major component of achievement is motivation. If the kids are motivated and can stay on task, have a little grit, can kind of work through the problems, those are the kids that really achieve well. And I actually see kids do very well learning this way. However, the hands-on portion of it, that's tough, because especially if you don't have the equipment, like we talked about before, they don't even have the computers to even look at the simulations or labs and things like that. That's pretty tough to do, you know, on paper and pencil. You know, a textbook is good, but actually having hands-on is even better. So some of our, like our project-based learning, they might be able to do welding, but they'll be at their family farm and they're able to do the welding and learn from their parents or grandparents and things like that. The problem is if you want to do welding and you didn't have a family farm or something like that, that's pretty tough. So I guess for the most part, to me, it's up to the motivation of the student. You know, if they want to put the time in, they can learn just about anything they want. The hard part is if they're not very motivated and the parents, you know, need to be stepping in at this time, you know, set up a schedule just like a regular day schedule. Hey, we got to go to work. We got to get this done by noon and those kind of things. And then the support there, that's where the tough part is.
Speaking of motivation, I happened yesterday to be visiting with a person who has students in the Menominee School District. In fact, they had you, Ann Hasse, as a teacher and said you were the best teacher they'd had. So good marks from these folks. But they said Menominee's gone to a pass-fail, and her high school student, who was an A student, has lost his motivation. It's frustrating to that individual. I would imagine, I'm not sure, but in elementary school, are you dealing with letter grades in general at all?
We have a standards-based report card in the elementary system.
Got it.
So we give a 4-3-2-1,
sure.
Meeting expectations, exceeding expectations, or, you know, I may need a little bit help, you know, in the 2 and the 1 area. But our fifth grade team just maintains high expectations. We ship out weekly learning goals for our new learning and just try to keep, you know, the bar high and just watch our students rise to the occasion.
John Griffiths, for those districts that have gone to pass-fail, are the schools basically throwing up their hands and saying that the online teaching they're doing is inferior to what parents or what students would have had in the classroom?
And again, that's a very good question. I know a friend of mine is a tech ed teacher, and he's working really hard sending out videos, just like the other teachers are talking about before, and for aviation and things like that, we try to do the best we can. The hard part is, again, the resources for the kids to have at home. And that's a hard part. Like, our WEN system, we're all based off of state standards. We meet all the state standards. For us, it's not a big deal if you have a curriculum built like that and the kids know ahead of time. But for someone that's kind of jumping in this brand new, it's kind of hard. You try to do what you can with what you got. And I'm sure everybody can say that, hey, we're not going to meet the same standards we have if we have the regular classroom face-to-face and hands-on. But that's where, you know, this innovation is coming in. Google Classroom and other things that the teachers are doing and meeting state standards. The pass-fail is, I guess, our way of, like even the colleges right now, our way of saying, hey, we're continuing to work. We're working hard. We're trying to do as much as we can with what we got. We probably won't get the same goals we had before, but we are working and we are learning. And that's the bottom line. Are you getting better? Are you getting, you know, smarter and stronger, whatever it might be? Like our FIAD teacher here at the school, he's outstanding. He has these awesome workouts he has the kids doing. Well, the kids could be doing them, and then for the most part, as long as they're doing it and sharing with the results with the teacher, they can do a pass-fail. Probably not as good as if he had them actually in the class, and they can actually see what's going on there and, you know, help motivate them there. Mm-hmm. But For the most part, the kids are learning probably not up to the pace that they, you know, would normally do in a classroom, but that's the goal. We just do the best we can with what we got.
Linda Flottam, the students being sent home, that didn't happen in a vacuum. In many cases, parents were suddenly dealing with helping their students shift to online learning, while many of them were dealing with child care issues in this age of the pandemic or were perhaps needing to use the broadband to work from home themselves. How involved have the districts been in managing the family dynamics that have changed because of the pandemic?
Well, I'm glad you let me answer this one because with small rural schools, it's a community thing. It's not just, you know, the school. It's the school, the parents, the students, the whole community, the businesses, everybody around. We all support each other because we are all affected by each other. And one of the things that our local business did, and I'm going to put in a plug for Infinity, they provided desks for students. Because as they said, gee whiz, all of a sudden, if you have two or three kids, plus you have the parents at home doing work from home, everybody's at the kitchen table trying to do their work. And it's really, really difficult. And then still try to keep some normalcy. So they developed a desk that you can put together, absolutely no tools, it just snaps together, and any student could come and pick them up. They were free of charge, and they gave away over 1,000 desks. Hmm. And it was just one of our ways to say, okay, so the student can go and sit off in their bedroom and work on this project, and if they have a question, they can come back out and ask. But yes, a lot of project-based things came out of this, and some of our teachers are really kind of excited about some of the things that they came up with, because it was you had to start thinking differently on how you were going to project the same means of learning that you wanted them to learn. I mean, we kept our bars high. We're not telling the kids that they can slough off. Yeah. They still have to meet all the same standards. We're just going to do this differently. We're going to give you a different project that will teach you the same thing.
In a few seconds, Linda Flottam, what issues is the Turtle Lake School Board wrestling with as it plans the coming school year, particularly as it relates to budget?
Oh, well, I guess one of our main concerns is that the state is saying, well, yes, we had the budget set, but you might not get those funds now. And it's like, but we need those funds. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've already set our budget. We've already set our tax rate. We can't expect the taxpayers to kick in more money. A lot of these people have been off work or out of work for a while. You know, they can't come up with some more money. It's like we don't have a money tree to make money from. And so we are just trying to be extremely careful on how we handle our budget, but try to keep things as normal as possible. And we always put the kids first. It's like, well, okay, we might need this for the coming year, but we might need those funds in order to make sure that we have programs for the students if we can't come back, if we have to stay online. So it's just, it isn't pretty, but but that's what we do.
As we wrap up, Ann Hasse, one last question for you. How has this experience changed you as a teacher?
I think I've just grown my own gratitude for the heroes, you know, our food service employees, making sure our families are getting fed each week, our tech department for getting technology in the hands of our kids, our school secretaries and custodians, pupil services, my colleagues at my building and across, you know, teachers in general. Just really working with our students and families to find the silver lining, you know, just in this pandemic and hopefully looking towards a brighter future.
Thank you to Ann Hasse from Wakanda Elementary School in Menominee, John Griffith from the Cameron Academy of Virtual Education, and Linda Flottam from the Turtle Lake School District Board of Education and the Wisconsin Association of School Boards. Thanks also to WPR reporter Rich Kramer, who joined us for our first segment. Catherine Thomas produced this hour. Kate Spranger is on the phones today. Next week, we check the temperature of western Wisconsin as we head into Memorial Day weekend with no safer at home order. It was good to be with you today. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and this is The West Side on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.